You're listening to Lawyers Grapes and Gripes. Naturally, any information you hear on this program is of a general nature only, and so it shouldn't be relied on in your individual circumstances, but rather you should seek individual legal advice. Thanks for listening.
Welcome to Community Connections on Yarra Valley FM 99.1, the voice of the valley. And of course, being the second Wednesday of the month, we have our legal people from Hutchison Legal. This week, we've got Sophie and Con. Welcome, Sophie and Con.
Good afternoon, Alan.
Now, we sent you away last month, or whoever was here last month, with and we want to know a bit about suppression orders. They seem to be almost giving out them without any problems at all. So what did you find out, and can you tell us, please?
Okay. Well, there's a fair bit to suppression orders. We all good to go?
Yep, you go.
Great, fantastic.
I guess the main thing was that people are getting the feeling that they're being handed out just much too easy, that, you know, it seems to be not every second case, but so many of those cases seem to be getting suppression orders. So we want to know, A, how come that's happening, but B, what are the conditions for a person to get a suppression order?
Okay. So suppression orders are there to prevent the publication of information relating to a court proceeding, and they're there to ensure that people get a fair trial, because they're usually related to criminal proceedings. And so where you have the media who love to report and speculate and take the position that information should be released in the public interest, the courts say we need to ensure that people who are up on charges get a fair hearing, a fair trial, without the prejudice that's caused by media articles and speculation. So it's for the court to determine whether a person is guilty or not.
So there doesn't have to be any special certain things that they have to look at first, the judges, or they can just make it?
Yes, they do need to determine that it's necessary, because courts are normally supposed to be open and public.
Yep.
And as far as possible, that's what they want it to be. But if the court, particularly the judge, thinks, and particularly where there's a jury that's going to deliberate on the case, if they think that it has to be done to prevent prejudice to administration of justice, also to protect national interest, because sometimes you have a case of national security where somebody's being prosecuted for a breach of national security laws, we don't want in the public domain all the ins and outs of how the secret the national security agencies work.
I think that's happened, Con, with this Ben. What's his name? Ben,
oh yes, Roberts Smith.
Well, they closed the courts yesterday for a few hours, and I believe they could be closed on and off for that same reason, for national security.
Yeah, so that's right. I mean, because people who face their trial may be years after the event, but if the media has been running a particular angle on the issues for years before the case, then every juror will have formed a perception in their mind whether that person's guilty or innocent. But who said that the media decides who's guilty or innocent? It's not for the media to decide.
I think they do.
Well, that's right. But there is a process. The courts don't do it lightly. They'll do it if they think it's necessary to protect the safety of a person, if it's to avoid embarrassment as well. And sometimes it's to protect the identity of a victim who's under 18 as well. So now that sometimes people think that's controversial, because some victims want to name the offender.
Yep.
Before the alleged offender's been found guilty, they want to say that person's guilty. And so we have this huge tension between wanting to speak out, this bad thing happened to me and that person's responsible for it, and the other person's right to have a fair trial without being prejudged. So,
Con, does somebody, will the judge himself or herself make that decision, or does somebody have to apply for that suppression order?
The court can do it of their own volition if they think but the it can also be applied for. Usually it's the alleged offender's lawyers saying we want a suppression order here because we want to get a fair trial for the offender. It's usually news organisations that don't want suppression orders because they want to report the story. And so the court has to notify the media organisations, and the media organisations can challenge whether the suppression order should remain in place. So they'll issue an interim order to start with, and then it can be challenged by the media. And then the judge will decide whether to maintain the suppression order or to allow it to be public. Sometimes they will allow certain information to be published. I think in the recent Christian Porter defamation case, which was a civil case, they were allowing some information out, but not all information out. Because sometimes during the running of a case, the media wants to run the case in the media rather than run it in the court. And the courts are very unhappy with that, very unhappy when the media step over the line.
And, Con, there are some fairly, for anybody who breaks them, there are some very stiff penalties, aren't there, for anyone who breaks suppression orders?
Well, that's right. So recently reported in the news, I think in the past week, we've had numerous news organisations paying large fines, hundreds of thousands of dollars for some of them, because they ran a series of articles which the media organisations didn't think breached the suppression orders, but clearly attacked the courts for even issuing suppression orders in a very high-profile case of George Pell. So that's recently been decided, and a very stern word for media who think that they can decide when information should be released. Unfortunately, in cases like that, the Victorian courts can only suppress the material in Victoria. And so, like with the Lawyer X case, that's also another famous case with some suppression orders, you could go to internet sites across the world and get the names of various people involved, but nobody in Victoria is allowed to publish those names.
Oh, that's fair enough.
So,
If they break suppression order, you're talking about that there's huge fines. Is there also jail terms for a proprietor of two things. Is there a jail term? And B, can a person be prosecuted for breaking a suppression order?
Yes. It is both a term of imprisonment can be imposed as well as fines.
Jump in, sorry, the maximum imprisonment is for 5 years as well, so it's quite a lengthy sentence.
Yeah, true.
Yeah, so it's quite serious.
Con, I've just got to take a quick break and we'll be back with more. Thanks.
Thank you.
You're listening to Lawyers, Grapes and Gripes. Naturally, any information you hear on this program is of a general nature only, and so it shouldn't be relied on in your individual circumstances, but rather you should seek individual legal advice. Thanks for listening.
And welcome back to Community Connections. And what I should say to you too, if you've got a question of the law, we can't discuss an actual case, but if you've got any questions of the law, give us a ring as quick as you can on 59 615 9191, 59 615 9191, and we'll put it to our legal people, both Sophia and Con, and we'll get you an answer straight away. These two are very smart people, so they know exactly what's going on. Sophia, there's been some changes in the rental law that you'd like to tell us about.
That's right. So on the 29th of March this year, there were over 130 rental law reforms put in place.
130?
So that's right. There's quite a lot. So it aims at giving tenants a safe and secure as well as affordable housing. And just to give a bit of example on the new policies, landlords can now only ask for 1 month of bond in terms of bond payment. And tenants can now make changes to rental property without seeking the landlord's consent, such as hanging pictures up, attaching wall anchoring devices, and they can also install their own security cameras. So there's obviously quite a lot more in those 130, but these are the ones that are most prominent at the moment.
If they do any damage or when they're finished, I mean, hanging pictures on the wall are not going to, but if they do any some of these other things, do they have to rectify them before they leave?
Yeah, if there's damage, obviously they have to make sure the property's in the condition as it was when they got it. But in terms of all the other changes, they're quite good for tenants now.
Yep. What about such... Well, obviously, people have got to have heating, although you hear stories that some landlords don't even supply that. What about such things as air conditioning? Is that still upon the tenant to put their own air conditioning in?
Yes, they can do that as well now.
Yeah.
Their own conditioning.
But, I mean, when they go out, they can't leave a hole in the wall, can they?
I'm not sure if it's just installed on the wall, for example. I'm not sure if they can leave that there. I guess it's just a case-by-case basis. If you come to an agreement with your landlord,
yep,
and if it's in the contract that the way you should leave the property when you vacate, then that's what you should do, what's in the contract.
No, that's fair enough too. I must make the point, there are some very poor tenants, but there are some very poor landlords as well that just don't want to supply anything to their people, you know. Now, we all know Katy Perry. We all know she's a singer. So you want to tell us something about Katy Perry?
That's right. So there's actually two Katy Perrys that people should know about.
What, both singers?
No, one of them's an Australian designer. Her name is K-A-T-I-E Perry, not K-A-T-Y Perry. But they're currently in a bit of a debacle because both of them sell clothing. One of them, being the singer, sells it at Maya. The other one has her own designer brand. So it's a current issue of copyright, just because of the name, obviously. It's still on foot at the moment, so I'm not sure what will happen with that, but I thought it's quite interesting that you could have a very famous singer trying to prevent an Australian designer from making her own clothes in Australia.
So it could come that the person could be barred from using their own name?
Yeah. It does depend on copyright. It's a very, again, case-by-case basis on copyright. But I do know that the designer was using her brand 14 years before Katy Perry even had a hit single. So timing-wise on who had the first patented name, for example, in Australia will also matter.
True. So that's going through the courts now, is it?
It is, yes.
Gee, that'll be an interesting case. Keep an eye on it for us if you could, and let us know when it's settled. Because, you know, if your name's Katy Perry, your name's Katy Perry, isn't it? You can't be expected to call yourself Wendy Bloggs, surely.
The thing to keep in mind here, Alan, is that it needs to be something that's in the same area. So, the Australian designer Katy Perry making clothes for 14 years, it's not a problem until Katy Perry, the singer, decides that she also wants to make clothes and sell them under a brand called Katy Perry. Then you have confusion in the market, a place amongst consumers. I want to buy a Katy Perry item. Which Katy Perry do they mean? And and that's, you know, because I want to buy, actually, I want to buy Australian, you know, an Australian fashion label. I want to buy the original Katy Perry, not the new Katy Perry line of clothes. So that's the difficulty in all markets. It has to be there.
And not everybody looks at the spelling of the name, do they?
No, it's the sound. That's right. So there's a thing called passing off. So it often happens people will try and use similar sounding names to draw attention from people who are actually looking for a different supplier. And because the sound is the same or similar, and so it leads to these problems. So there was recently a dispute over the Australian famous Ugg boots, and selling them in Australia is unrestricted or less restricted, but there is a trademark in other countries around the world, and so an Australian maker of Ugg boots who sold them online to another country got in trouble for breaching the trademark in the other country.
Sure. All right, look, we'll take a break and we'll be back with more on Yarra Valley FM 99.1, the voice of the valley.
You're listening to Yarra Valley FM 99.1.
You're listening to Lawyers Grapes and Gripes. Naturally, any information you hear on this program is of a general nature only, and so it shouldn't be relied on in your individual circumstances, but rather you should seek individual legal advice. Thanks for listening.
Welcome back to Community Connections on Yarra Valley FM 99.1, where it's 24 minutes to one, and we've hit a really high temperature of 10 degrees. And look, quickly, if you'd like to know, get an answer on any aspect of the law, you need to ring us pretty quickly on 59-615-991. 59-615-991. You've got both Sophia and Con here. Only two are you going to help you. Con, you'd like to talk about the employment law, particularly when you're talking about casual employment.
Oh, yes. I think I'll ask Sophia to tell us about it, the changes to the definition of casual employee.
Now,
thanks,
that's called passing the buck real quick.
No, it's actually some really good news for casual employees, because previously there was some ambiguity as to what actually constituted a casual employee. Some people thought that it could be determined by the conduct of the parties, but thankfully the Fair Work Act has now defined it specifically as meaning an employee that was offered a contract without an indefinite work arrangement. So there wasn't a need for indefinite work commitments, and the person accepted the offer on that basis. But the good news is that now casual employees must be offered a full-time or a part-time position after 12 months of being employed with their employer. So this is a must by employers. And it's worth noting that now casual employment isn't defined by actions rather than the contract that the employees offered. So actions are off the table. It's just the contract that is offered and what's accepted.
So casual employment, is that somebody that only works 10 hours a week or something? Or I'm still not quite 100% sure what actually a casual employer, casual employee is.
Yeah, may I step in here? I think the idea of casual employment is that it's meant to give an employer quick access to someone at various hours and no set sort of regular pattern of work. Right. So it's really meant to be casual in that sense. Can you come for these hours today, or can you come for those hours next week? Unfortunately, over the years, that got abused where people were employed as casuals, which they liked it because it had a 25% loading on top of the regular award rates. But then people would be set into like a roster. So they were being paid as a casual, but they had a set roster every week or every fortnight. And the idea is not to use casuals in that way. The idea is that a casual is somebody that can say yes or no to an offer of hours of work, but it's not meant to be on a pattern.
So you might do 10 hours this week, or you might do 20 next week and all that.
Yes. Right. But no set starting time. No set, you know, like it changes from time to time as the need arises. And it's because of that, there was a case where, or numerous cases where, a casual employee got 25%, then worked a regular set of hours, and then sued the employer and said, you should have paid me superannuation, or you should have paid me leave loading, or you should have paid me all these other things. And there was a court case that determined that they should get all these extras. And the employer said, but wait a minute, I've paid you 25% more than the normal pay for those hours, and now you want more on top of that. So the government has stepped in to clarify that 25% extra that's paid can be counted against any award entitlements, because to stop that double payment effect.
Well, otherwise you're getting the 25%, aren't you, to compensate for this other, and then you're still getting the other as well.
That's right. That's right. But it all came about because of these, you know, regular set hours. People were getting paid as casuals but working a set, like a part-time employee. So they really should have always been treated as part-time employees if they're working the same set hours every week.
All right, look, we'll take a quick break and we'll be back with more on Yarra Valley FM 99.1, the voice of the valley.
Yarra Valley FM acknowledges the traditional owners, the Wurundjeri people, as the custodians of this land we broadcast from. We pay respects to elders past, present, and emerging.
Listening to Lawyers, Grapes and Gripes. Naturally, any information you hear on this program is of a general nature only, and so it shouldn't be relied on in your individual circumstances, but rather you should seek individual legal advice. Thanks for listening.
Welcome back to Community Connections on Yarra Valley FM 99.1, the voice of the valley, where it's 14 minutes to one. Can't believe how quick this hour goes, our legal hour with our people, both Sophia and Con. Con, you want to talk a little bit about the superannuation changes that have gone through too?
Yes, that's following on from our employment. We've got an article in our latest newsletter, which you can get from our website, which is hopefully advertised in our ad, which is great. There's changes from 1st of July. Good news for employees is that the superannuation compulsory rate will increase to 10%, and then it will also increase to 10.5% the following year in 2022. So that's the idea, is to get more super into superannuation. These were delayed changes from many years ago, which the government have decided to implement.
They're aiming for 15% eventually. Is that right, Con?
Yes, I think that's the longer term plan, but I don't think it's legislated. Well, I'd have to check again, but yeah, the aim would be to get it there. But obviously, having various events in the meantime, such as a global pandemic,
hasn't helped,
and there was some other political reasons why it wasn't implemented sooner. So, yeah, so that's interesting. There's also changes. Now, we can't give financial advice here. We must give that warning We're lawyers, not financial advisors. People should get their own financial advice. There are changes to the amounts you can put in to super each year in addition to any employment contributions, and also transition to retirement type arrangements where you can keep working and still contribute to super and get concessional tax treatment on those payments. Now a lot of people access their super during the changes, which will add 10,000 or up to 20,000 in total being withdrawn, but that's ended now. So people shouldn't assume that you can get access to super before you reach the correct age to pay bills. So some people seem to think that that's available. It's not available. It's meant to be held for your retirement.
No worries. Now, you also want, I think Sophie is going to talk about My Health.
That's right. So, Con touched on the pandemic. It's obviously quite important that everything's moving online so we can adjust to our usual dealings as we did before. But there were some concerns last year about who had access to your My Health records. Some people thought that insurance companies had access to your records, which is obviously private information. The government has said that this is not true at all. So the only people that should have access to your records are yourself, people you've authorised, and your GP. But obviously there's quite a few cyber attacks on the rise at the moment. So it's important to check your access history so you're aware of who is actually accessing your records. To do that, you simply log on to your My Health online, and there should be a tab called Check Access History or Access History. It's important to know who has access to them, and then if there's any concerns, you should address them.
So have we all got a password to that, or the first time you go on, how do you access that? Because I've never tried.
No, you should create an account. I believe it's linked to MyGov. Everything is moving to MyGov at the moment, as far as I'm aware. So just follow the prompts to create your account.
Sophia, I thought that once you've got this account, that everything that you did had to go on to that. And I'll tell you, I had an experience only this week. Now, every year I go and get my PSA and cholesterol and, you know, iron and all that checked. And I saw on the form there was a spot for the doctor to tick, yes, it went on to My Health, or no, it didn't go on. Why would it not go on?
Not sure, actually, Con, why something wouldn't go on there. I guess that's a conversation you can have with your GP if you want it to go on there. Because everything's moving online, as I said, at the moment. I guess it's lagging behind a little bit. Some GPs are different to others. But it's a conversation worth having with your GP so that everything's centralised in the one place.
Yeah, but I didn't think there would have been an opt-out. I wouldn't have thought that would have been on the form, to be honest with you.
Mm. Yeah, look, the government, I think, is very sensitive to forcing people to do anything.
apart from,
that's a state government rather than a federal government. But the federal government's more concerned about not forcing people to do things if they can avoid it. There was a time when you had to opt out of My Health record as well. Like there was, you could opt out of it altogether. Every person needs to make their own decision. Is it going to be in the interest of their healthcare that if they move to a different doctor, different clinic, different, you know, suburb or city in Australia, don't you want the new doctor that you see to understand your history?
Yep.
And it's only, the record is only meant to be there for a purpose of providing you with healthcare. It's not there for anything else.
Oh, sorry, I didn't mean to cut across you.
That's okay.
Everybody knows I had an episode early this year where I had a blood clot in my leg, and so I was sent to emergency. Would they automatically then just look up My Health, do they? I don't know.
My understanding is they should. They should be looking there for, if you're allergic to something, or if there's a particular medication that they want to give you an injection of something, they shouldn't just do that without checking that you haven't got some huge allergic reaction to that, or you know. So that's really could be life threatening. So I'm sure they would want to check that first before they administer anything. But if you've opted out all the time, then it's a bit of bad luck if they get it wrong.
I haven't opted that out at all. We'll take a quick break and we'll be back with more on Yarra Valley FM 99.1.
Your big disgrace, kicking your can all over the place, singing,
we will rock you. We will rock you.
Buddy, you're a young man, hard man, shouting in the street, you're gonna take on the world someday. You got blood on your face, your big disgrace, waving your banner all over the place. Somebody better put your bag into your place.
We will rock you.
Sing it.
We will rock you.
Everybody,
we will rock you. We will rock you.
All right.
Naturally, any information you hear on this program is of a general nature only, and so it shouldn't be relied on in your individual circumstances, but rather you should seek individual legal advice. Thanks for listening.
Welcome back to Community Connections on Yarra Valley FM 99.1, the voice of the valley. And we've got our legal hour fast coming to an end. So if you do have any questions, we can't answer them today, but certainly send us an email to info@yarravalleyfm.org.au. That's info@yarravalleyfm.org.au. Or you can always give us a ring in the next hour or so, but I won't be able to get you the answers until next month on 59-615-991. 59-615-991. Now, we always have some questions, and we've got one here. I'll do it as best I can. We're talking about fines that are issued. Now, the person was talking about probably the COVID-19. They've either been outside the 5Ks or whatever. But I don't want to get into that because I don't never want to get into political stuff. So we'll take it out to speeding fines and all that sort of stuff. Now, I know as lawyers you're going to tell us you should get a lawyer before you go to court because you guys are the ones that need to be there. And look, I'm only joking. I know that you people know what goes on in the court, and Joe Bloggs, who's never been there before, thinks they're going to win a case and they get up and they get tongue-tied. I guess what we really want to know is, A, can all fines be challenged? So that's the first thing. Any fine. B, is there a chance that if you find whatever it might be, well, is there a chance that when you go to court that it's going to be increased, or is it going to be decreased? Forgetting about the fact that you really do need a lawyer to fight the case, and I totally agree with that. I mean, I think you're silly if you don't. But I'd like them to have a look at that, and under what conditions can you challenge? Like, if I know, well, I haven't had one, thank goodness, but I'm told if you get a speeding fine, you just sign a thing to say you're going to challenge it in court and away you go. Is that all you've got to do, or does there have to be a reason for you to challenge it? Can you just go, I mean, it's no good going along and saying, well, I didn't agree, but it was a 60K zone, I was doing 90 and I didn't agree. You're never going to win that. On these fine cases, Do they have to be fought on legal precedents? Because Mr. and Mrs. Average wouldn't have a clue. Or is it a case of you just go along and run the case, and if you get a really nice magistrate, he might give you a community order?
All right. Well, we look forward to our colleagues answering that question next time.
Can I chuck another one in, though, while we're talking about that? If you're given a community order, we'll say that you go along and you've done something wrong and the magistrate says, oh, well, I'll give you 3 months community order. Does a magistrate's court ever follow up to see that? Because it then goes on to the Department of Justice, so I understand, and it's up to them to make sure that you do it. Is there ever any check-up to make sure that they do it? Now, we're not trying to get people not to do it. And what sort of follow-up is there?
All right. Well, we'll try and get some answers, and our colleagues hopefully next month will answer them for you. I just wanted to say there, Alan, on the issue about getting a lawyer, I put it this way. You don't do your own dental work, or you shouldn't do your own dental work. You shouldn't do your own legal work either. It's better to leave it with somebody who's professional and experienced rather than do it yourself. So.
And too many people at the moment are using Dr. Google too, and the doctors tell me that's a real problem because, they've had heaps of experience and all of a sudden people looking up and saying, oh, I got this and I got that, and they haven't got it at all.
There's also a lawyer Google where people use American documents and arguments and try and tell them to the magistrate. And it just doesn't work. And using capital letters doesn't change anything.
Look, unfortunately, our time's gone. Look, it really goes very quickly when I get you people in. So somebody be back the second Wednesday of next month straight after Midday News. Thanks
Connor. Thanks very much.
Thank you.
For being with us.
A pleasure.